My name is John Morris. I'm a retired lawyer. The title of the book is Force of Evil, The Clydach Murders, and it was published a few days ago on the 12th of February. It's the third book in a trilogy. The first book, The Clydach Murders, A Miscarriage of Justice, was published in 2017, and an updated version, which had new information, was published in 2019, I think it was. And this is the latest and certainly the last book in the trilogy, Force of Evil, The Clydach Murders.
Well, you say the last one, but it still is a miscarriage of justice. At least that's what many people believe. Yes. So maybe that. Do you think how did you as a solicitor get interested in this story?
Well, in 1999, when the murders happened, I left Swansea to move to South Wales because my wife was Irish. She wanted to live over here. Our children.
Sorry, you left Swansea. I mean, Swansea is South Wales, isn't it?
Yeah, Swansea in South Wales. Yeah.
Yeah. You said you left Swansea to move to South Wales.
No, did I say that? Sorry, I left Swansea to move to Southern Ireland. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, to move to Southern Ireland because the children had a gap in their education and it seemed a good idea at the time. So we came over then. So I didn't know an awful lot about the murders at the time, but I would go back to Swansea quite often and meet up with my friends. We'd always end up discussing the Clydach murders like people do in Swansea, and they encouraged me to write the story of the crime.
Okay, so can you give us an idea of your career as a solicitor? Were you doing criminal cases like this or not?
Yes, I was. They weren't this heavy, but I must admit that I did do some crime. Yes, it was a general practice, and I did undertake some criminal cases.
Okay, so you're chatting with your friends. I mean, it's another step, isn't it, to decide you want to start writing a book about it?
Absolutely. Well, I had written a book previously, so they thought that I was the right person to write this book because there were so many questions hanging over the case, and we'd examine them minutely and probably for hours on end. They thought that I would be the person to write the book because I understood the law, the criminal law as it applied, and I'd written a book previously, so I suppose I had all the characteristics I needed to write a story. I didn't want to because from what I knew about the story, David Morris had been twice convicted of the crime, therefore it was twice as likely that he was guilty. But then when I began to research the story, a lot of what I learned just did not sound right. In fact, it sounded extremely off. There were some very strange anomalies connected with the case, which I couldn't understand. And the more I looked into it, the less I could understand it. And it soon became very, very clear that Di Morris had been set up for the crime by South Wales Police.
Okay, so can you just take us through what we do know and that's not disputed about what happened in 1999 in Clydach?
On the night of 26th of June and Sunday the 27th of June, that's the time when the murders were committed. They were discovered early the following morning following a house fire. It wasn't realised at first that there had been a murder, but it soon became very, very clear that it was. The firemen that went into the house began bringing out the bodies, and they pretty soon discovered that they had been battered and very badly attacked. And so it was clear that it was a murder very early on.
Right. So the fire was there to sort of try and cover the murder up. So who was involved in the house and outside that we're sure of? And then maybe we can look at you know, the way that the miscarriage of justice continued.
Okay. Well, where do we go with the story from there? It's very strange because Stuart Lewis arrived at the crime scene very early on in the morning of the murders, but he didn't stay very long. He went into the house. He asked the firemen to wash the house down, which if they'd done so would have destroyed any DNA and fingerprint evidence.
So who is this guy?
Four Lewises, actually. There are two Lewis brothers who are both police officers in South Wales Police. And you have Alison Lewis, who's an ex-WPC. She left the force some years before, suffering with mental health. And Alison, of course, was Mandy Power, one of the victims' lesbian lovers. Alison Lewis was married to Stephen Lewis. Their marriage was going through a very bad time. They were heading towards separation or divorce. Stuart Lewis was Stephen's identical twin brother, biologically identical twin brother, but they also have another brother called Christopher, who never featured in the first two books, but he features in this one quite a lot.
Okay, I think it's important to just sort of describe the two different scenarios. There's one scenario which has been, maybe that's the best place to start, I think, is with what the official version of what happened there, as explained through the courts. Let's have a look at that one first. What happened?
Before you get to the court, you have to ask yourself, how did the matter get to court at all, and how did the matter get to court with Di Morris? Now, the police investigation discovered that Stephen Lewis was a hot suspect for the crime. He had threatened to kill Mandy Power 3 weeks before the murders. His fingerprints or DNA was found on two matches that had been used to light the fires in the house. And he had been seen in the area of Kelvin Road by a reliable witness at about 2:30 on the Sunday morning of the murders. There was more evidence against him, but then I think it was Wynne Phillips took the case to a barrister in Cambridge, and the barrister, we don't know who this barrister was, but the barrister in Cambridge said, very sorry, but there's no case you can bring against Stephen Lewis. We don't understand, because a child would know that there was enough evidence there to bring a case against him. If you'd like me to move on to Di Morris, I can tell you that there was absolutely no evidence against him at the time the police brought the prosecution against him. At the time they arrested Di Morris, they had previously interviewed him, so they knew what he would say. They knew that he would deny any association with Mandy Power, because it would wreck his relationship with his girlfriend. And they knew that he would deny that he owned the necklace, the gold necklace that was found at the crime scene. They were determined to prosecute him. But at the time they did prosecute him, there was absolutely no evidence against him whatsoever. So,
well, this necklace sounds like it could be quite crucial. What was that doing there?
Well, the police say that it was torn off in the struggle and it was found on the floor. And this is what eventually led them to Di Morris. But the truth of the matter is that Di Morris had been having a sexual relationship with Mandy Power for 6 months or a year before the murders. He went there on the Friday morning to continue a sexual relationship with her. His neck chain was broken. He left it in the house. He forgot to take it with him. And Mandy Power was going to take the broken gold neck chain in to get it repaired. But of course, before she could do that, she was murdered. I can't remember now. I think it was Louise Pugh or Mandy Power that took the gold chain from the kitchen and put it up in the bedroom. And of course, then it somehow found its way onto the floor during the chaos of the fight that subsequently followed.
Okay, well, look, there's been lots of pulling apart of this case. So can you give us an alternative as to what you think may have happened?
Well, I know what happened. I know exactly what happened. The police had a problem. The police did not want to prosecute three of their own or four of their own. Furthermore, they were under orders not to do so, we believe, and they had to find a way out of the problem that they had. They knew that the Lewises were under suspicion, and they could have arrested them with all the information, the evidence that they had, but they failed to do so for a year, well, just about a year. I think it was Detective Superintendent Martin Lloyd Evans appeared on a Sky TV interview and said that a witness, who was, of course, Louise Pugh, who lived with Mandy Power and her family, came forward almost a year after the murders and told them two new pieces of information that they didn't know about before. And on that basis, they decided to arrest the Lewises at that time, a year later. Now, that was clearly untrue, and we've proved it's untrue, because the two new pieces of information were that Mandy Power told them a year afterwards that Stephen Lewis had threatened to kill Mandy Power and possibly her family too. And secondly, that she had gone into Quicksave in Clydach and bought some wine because Alison Lewis was due to be coming round that night. Now, we know that's not true, because in 2014, it was discovered that there was a memo left on the Holmes police computer system that said that that was handed in by a police informer the day before the murders on the 28th of June that said that Mandy Power has been threatened by a senior police officer, threatened to be killed by a senior police officer, and she is very, very worried about it. And that was posted on the Holmes computer system at the time of the murders. Also, there were a number of friends of Mandy Power who were in the street at the time who were telling all the detectives that Stephen Lewis had threatened Mandy Power and he should be investigated. But the police never did anything about that at the time at all. And the other point was that she'd gone into Quicksave to buy the bottle of wine. Well, and the police showed a video film which showed Mandy Power and one of her daughters walking around inside Quicksave. And they said that they had just retrieved that film based upon what Louise Pugh had told them. But we know that's not true as well, because we have researched this and we've discovered that the footage from Quicksave erased itself after 2 weeks. And the person who was in the store at the time, the store manager at the time, said that within days of the murders, the police came into the store and retrieved and took away with them the CCTV evidence. So all the evidence that Martin Lloyd Evans said he only had a year later was completely untrue. And in fact, he had that evidence within days of the murders.
OK, so what about these Lewises? What might be a possible murder for them to be involved?
What do you mean? I'm not quite with you.
The police, what is the yes. potential evidence that they might have been involved in the murder?
Well, Stephen Lewis was certainly seen by a reliable witness in the vicinity of Kelvin Road on the night of the murders. Possibly she, Alison Lewis and Stuart Lewis were also possibly seen first at the bottom of the road and then arguing very close to Kelvin Road. And as I mentioned already, Stephen Lewis's fingerprints were found on two burnt matches used to start the fires in the house. When he was asked to explain how his fingerprints had been found on the matches, he explained it by saying that he had used the matches to light a gas stove in Mandy Power's kitchen. But the problem with that argument was that Mandy Power didn't have a gas stove. She had an electric stove, so that couldn't possibly be true.
Right. So, look, we've got this policeman. What would possibly be the motive for the policeman to have murdered Mandy Power?
Extreme jealousy. Alison Lewis was having an affair with a lesbian affair with Mandy Power, quite a steamy lesbian affair from what I can gather. And she was also conducting lesbian affairs with other women, all this behind her husband's back. Her husband knew about it and he was getting very irate. And that's one of the reasons which caused him to drive to the house 3 weeks before the murders and tell Mandy Power in the presence of Louise Pugh, stay away from my wife or I will kill you. He may have said kill you all, but certainly Mandy and her and one of her children or both of her children were reduced to tears and they just flopped down in the doorway, absolutely terrified of what the senior police officer had said to them. He then went off, jumped in his car and screeched off down the road.
Right. So is there a lack of discipline in South Wales police, do you think?
just a little bit, I would say, yes. It's considered to be the most corrupt police force in Britain after the Met. So, yes.
Who says that?
Where did I hear that? That was, who was that said? But I can't remember offhand. I had it from, oh, I do remember, yeah. It came from a firm of solicitors called Havers, who represent all police officers in Britain.
So right. And how do you score something like, you know, corruption? It's a bit of a nebulous term, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it will be the number of miscarriages of justice that have been proven. And there have been more miscarriages of justice proven in South Wales than just about anywhere else.
OK, so when there is a miscarriage of justice, obviously there yes. are attempts, aren't there, to put the record straight and to yes. make sure that people who've been put inside and shouldn't be put inside are let free. So what's been going on with this since 99 and since the, you know, this has come to court, the Clydach murders?
Yeah, well, I think there have been two appeals to the CCRC, Criminal Cases Review Commission, and both of them have been refused. Why the second one should have been refused, I don't know, because the affidavit of Louise Pugh, which appears in the book, clearly indicates that Di Morris was having an affair with Mandy Power, which was always rejected by the police, but it's quite clear that he was. And from that alone, that should have raised the finger of suspicion that something was not right where Di Morris was concerned. I mean, the police were quite clear that he'd never had a relationship with Mandy Power, and that was the line they stuck to. That was the line they stuck to throughout the whole trial, that he went to the house to have sex with Mandy Power at about midnight. She wouldn't let him, so he beat her to death, which is farcical if it wasn't so serious, because it's now very well known that Doris Dawson was killed first. So there's a serious anomaly there that just cannot be explained by simple
logic. I mean, this is also sometimes neglected, isn't it, that this wasn't just one murder, there were several. No. Can you explain what happened?
I wish I could. I wasn't there to see it for myself, but it seems clear that Doris Dawson was murdered first. But she wasn't murdered at the same time.
So who was Doris? What was her relationship to Mandy?
I'm sorry, Doris is the 80-year-old disabled grandmother. There were four women living in the house. There was Doris Dawson, who was an 80-year-old disabled grandmother. I think she spent a lot of her time in bed. She clearly wasn't very well. She could walk, but she didn't walk well. And then you've got 34-year-old Mandy Power, who was a very attractive divorcee, I suppose, who had an eye for the men since she got divorced from her husband. And then there was little Katie, who was 10, and Emily, who was 8. Now, on that night, Doris had been in bed. Mandy and the two girls had gone out to do some babysitting, and they got back home just before 12 o'clock. The taxi driver saw them walk into the house, and that was the last he saw of them. They closed the door. And the next thing that is known is that there was a fire in the house at about 20 past 4 in the morning, I think it was. And the police would say that all four female victims were murdered in that time, but it's quite clear now that Doris Dawson was murdered possibly as early as 7:30 or around that time on the Saturday evening. And we actually have two death certificates. There's one death certificate saying that she died on Saturday, the 26th of June, and another death certificate that says she was killed on the 27th of June. So they can't both be right. And it's our contention that she actually died early on the Saturday night. We say that because Louise Pugh was told by a detective, Phil Rees, that she had been murdered long before Louise pushed an Armageddon video through Mandy Powell's letterbox at 8:30 on the Saturday night.
Sorry, what video?
There's a video called Armageddon. At one stage, we were going to call the book Armageddon, but we decided against it. Armageddon was a very well-known video that came out, I think, in 1998 or 1999. The theme tune was by Aerosmith, and the two girls, Mandy and a lesbian lover, Alison Lewis, the ex-PC, loved watching that film, and they loved the music from that film. Well, because Mandy thought that Alison was going to be coming around late on the night of Saturday, she wanted the Armageddon video that Louise Pugh had. Now, Louise Pugh lived next door with the mother. Mandy and the girls were out that night babysitting. Louise was also out that night babysitting. But Louise went back to her house, retrieved the video Armageddon, and pushed it through Mandy Power's letterbox because she couldn't get into the house because she didn't have a key. So the Armageddon video was pushed through Mandy Power's letterbox at 8:30 on the Saturday evening. Within 4 days, the Armageddon video had been retrieved from the Lewis's home in Pontydowie, and it had Mandy Power's blood on it. So wow. that was pretty damning in itself.
It is, isn't it? So attempts for it. Can we get back to the attempts to get actual justice here? Because I know Di Morris was jailed for this, wasn't he?
He was jailed for life. Yeah, I think he had 4 life terms, yes. We have a team working on this at the moment. We've got a High Court judge. We've got 2 human rights lawyers, a university professor and a law lecturer, and 3 high-profile miscarriage of justice activists. I'll tell you a little anecdote, actually. The Crown Court judge that we're working on told us that when he sat in criminal cases, South Wales police officers routinely lied on oath more often than the accused who was being tried. So that's a sad indictment on them, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I know Di has now died, hasn't he, in prison?
Yeah, he died a couple of years. I think he died during the COVID period. Apparently no suspicious circumstances surrounding his death, but he was certainly very young when he died. What was he, 54, I think? Yeah, very, very sad day. It's always a very sad day when somebody who claims to be innocent of a crime dies in prison before he can prove it.
So what about the Lewises and the police connection? Are they still serving?
I would imagine that they've all retired now. I'm pretty sure that they've all retired now, but I believe that they all had big payouts as a result of being wrongly arrested and questioned over the murders, so they say.
Now, I wonder also about the roles of the chief constables of South Wales Police, because this is a politically charged force, isn't it? Because they oversee what is now the Welsh Parliament, and so there's bound to be lots of sort of high level connections between politicians and police, and they will want to make sure that the police in South Wales don't go treading on the toes that feed them, in a way, the people that pay their wages, the politicians.
Well, that's right, yes. I don't think the police are particularly concerned with the way they spend their money, because they were paying a lot of people off in this case. We know that some people were paid off in this case. Christina Pugh was one who was paid off. She received a large sum of money. There was Janice Stitch.
Why?
So that she would help the police with their inquiries. She was Louise Pugh's mother, and she was working with the police to make sure that Louise told the police what the police wanted to hear.
Well, this is not normal, surely, the idea that a witness has just paid lots of money. Do they normally do that?
I don't know. Well, I know that South Wales Police did it in this case, and it's likely that they've done it in other cases. They paid Janice Stix Williams, a large sum of money as well. Another one, Gary Bynum, would believe they paid him a lot of money as well. There are several witnesses we can point to, and we have suspicions about who did receive large sums of money, either for keeping quiet or for giving tainted evidence. But no doubt about it, they did.
So do any of the senior police, I mean, I'm thinking about Matt Jukes, for example, who was chief constable fairly recently, I think in the 2010s, for South Wales Police, who's, I mean, many of these people have been promoted to incredibly senior roles. Matt Jukes is now deputy chief constable of the Met, or deputy commissioner, where he's in charge of all anti-terror policing in the entire country. So that's a liaison with MI5, overseeing the policing of the royal family. So you do worry that some of the senior police that have kept a lid on this in South Wales may have actually been promoted.
Well, Detective Superintendent Martin Lloyd-Evans received an OBE, was it about 2017? I'm not sure, but he received an OBE for his services to policing. And this is the detective that delayed the case for an entire year before arresting the Lewises and then releasing them.
So it does look as if maybe the these gongs are issued out for jobs done for the establishment rather than for actually them doing their job for the public.
It seems very likely, doesn't it? Yes, it seems very likely. You would think that their pay would be enough to compensate them for what they were doing. But yes, to get gongs as well does make it highly suspicious that they were getting gonged for something that's not publicly known. Agreed.
Well, look, without too much of a sort of spoiler here, can you just give us an idea of what's in this book that's not been in previous ones?
I can. We identify people in this book. We identify 1, 2, 3 people that were never previously identified as being involved in the killings. The killings were carried out in a very specific way. It could well be that the children weren't supposed to be there that night. In fact, the children weren't supposed to be there that night. They were due to be staying with their father, Michael Power, but he brought the children back on the Saturday, saying he had work commitments and he couldn't look after them anymore. I think that Mandy Power is very unhappy about that, because she intended to spend the evening with Alison Lewis when she came home from her babysitting task. So to have the children there was very inconvenient for her as well.
Can you say something about your co-author? How did you come to be doing this as a pair?
Paul Dowling heard about the murders on the radio, I think it was, when he was travelling somewhere. He heard about them for the first time. And I think fairly soon afterwards, he was watching a TV news programme where Martin Lloyd-Evans appeared. And he told me that Lloyd-Evans looked as though he was a rabbit caught in the headlights, and that he felt that he just wasn't telling the truth. Now, Paul and our team really have been researching this case from the word go, literally from the word go. Paul has got more than 24 years experience of researching the Clitheroe murders. He knows what he's talking about. We put everything through our team. The team contribute towards the book as well. They've all contributed towards it, and we all have one goal in mind, which is to get to the truth of the murders and see justice done. Paul Downing is, I think, a retired engineer. He's very determined, very dogged. He goes out, he will interview witnesses, and he will dig up evidence where there didn't appear to be any evidence. He will talk to witnesses. They will reveal to him what they might not reveal to anybody else. He's a wonderful first-class investigator and a researcher.
Now, Clitheroe is north of Swansea. It's at the north end of Swansea. Yeah. I mean, is this still a topic of conversation in the town itself?
Never stopped. Over 25 years, it still hasn't stopped. You can go to any pub, any club, anywhere in Swansea, any coffee shop, and they will be talking about the Clitheroe murders. Maybe not so much now as they did. Hopefully, Paul and my book will clear up an awful lot. We do identify the people who were involved in the crime. We're 100% sure that it was them, and we know how it happened, and we know how the police conspiracy and cover-up happened as well.
What structures need to change within the police in order to make this kind of miscarriage of justice less likely? Because I rather, you know, I find it horrifying, really, that you've got police that have been paid, are getting pensions, etc., etc., who not only are murderers potentially, but also have fitted people up and put them in prison. So these are really serious criminals posing as retired police officers.
So how does it happen? You're quite right. Well, fortunately, I have a relative in South Wales Police who told me exactly how it happens. You join the police force with all good intentions. You're an honest person. You have to be if you want to join the police, I would imagine. But you join the police with all good intentions, and then little things go awry. You don't do something, you miss an appointment, you make a mistake, and your fellow police officers will cover you up. And the mistakes get bigger and bigger, and the determined acts get bigger and bigger, and eventually you find yourself in a position where you have to cover up your fellow officer's mistakes, and he will cover up yours. And you get to the point where there's the point of no return, where you just can't stop doing it. And that, I believe, is what happened here. There are a number of police officers who did not want to get involved in this. But for the most part, they did, because their pensions and their careers were at stake. So they went along with it for those reasons.
But is there any avenue to correct this, do you think, within the police? I mean, how can we change things to make this sort of thing far less likely?
Well, I think the police force is led from the top, from the police constable. It's up to him to change the force, to make sure that his force, I mean, not all forces act this way. I mean, for South Wales Police to have the accolade of being the second most corrupt police force in Britain after the Met is pretty damning. It needs to be led from the top. It needs a total restructure and a complete overhaul. And even then, I wonder, would it work? I don't know.
What about Matt Jukes? Do you know anything about him when he was chief constable? Because, you know, he is probably the most high profile chief constable of South Wales Police, who's gone on to take on massive responsibility, international responsibility, really, in London.
Yeah, he has. No, I'm sure that he knew about what was going on. I'm sure that all the police, the chief constables, knew what was going on. But I wouldn't like to say what involvement Matt Jukes may have had or not in this particular conspiracy.
Okay, can you just remind us then of the title and where to get the book?
Sure. The book is available from Amazon on either paperback or Kindle, and the name of the book is Force of Evil, The Clitheroe Murders.
Okay, John, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Much appreciated.